Don't be discouraged. The man, he ain't so hard to understand. You know, he's not trying to make trouble. He's just stressing out like every other fan. Well, there's good in every team. Things aren't always what they seem. You can always find a winner if you try. Hey, things will be better. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, they will for Parker and the man. Oh, yes, they will for Parker and the man. Even though Mike Wilson, he can't understand. Parker and Wilson. Sports Night with Parker.
So this is our big podcast for election week. We are now into election week, November, the week of the 4th, 2013. If you're in the city of Detroit, make sure you get out and vote whoever you want for the new mayor of the city of Motown. Rob Parker, I know you're always about people getting out there and getting the vote on the Tuesday election day.
Absolutely. Always people have died and waged all kinds of efforts to get everybody the opportunity to vote, so you'd be... You can't complain, Mark, if you don't vote. That's how I always look at it. Don't say anything. If you don't
Mike Duggan, Benny Napoleon, don't care either way. Just get out there and vote. I know Mike Duggan spent about $800,000 more than Benny did, but what are you going to do?
That's the only thing I don't... something doesn't add up to me. That a guy could be a write-in and win. I just can't...
That's unprecedented. For a major city.
If it would have happened, I don't know. I don't know. I mean...
Well, it'll happen. I think Mike Duggan will win.
You think so?
Right in that many votes? Oh, that's amazing to me. Then.
I just don't know if there's enough Benny support. And that's because Duggan was able to spend a lot more money. But that's neither here nor there.
Right. I'm just saying about the write-in part. That's all.
All right. So I like both guys, by the way. Known both guys for a long time, both Napoleon and Duggan. So, in fact, I saw Duggan getting wings at Buffalo Wild Wings. He was getting some wings.
Is that right? Parmesan garlic.
Probably.
All flats. Like, I like them.
We also have a winner, first of our T-shirt, that we're giving away, the ESPN Detroit T-shirts, because I have so many damn money. I mean, just tons of these things. Paul Franklin of E-Course listens to the podcast. He did exactly as we said. He went to ParkerandTheMan@Yahoo.com. He gave me a Rob Parkerism, and it was, and I wrote it down, go get lioned to you. Go get lioned.
Hey, Mark.
Yes, Rob.
Go get lioned.
Now, you did it for you, Paul. So we're going to do it again this week.
I need some of those T-shirts for Christmas gifts.
Right. I'll see how many I got left.
Well, that probably shouldn't work for me, right?
What?
Giving away ESPN.
Yeah, you know, I don't know why you personally want to give away an ESPN
right.
Detroit
you're
shirt,
right,
but
you're right.
With the logo. It's a cool shirt, but maybe you don't want it.
No, I got some friends. You know what? I tell you, Mark, the only reason I keep your shirts, because those are different from, to me. I look at it totally different.
I mean,
from the television to...
Oh, yeah.
You
well,
know what I mean?
Like, per your situation with ESPN
right.
has nothing to not to do with
right.
it.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I have your shirt. I still have it.
I thought we gave you a golf shirt, right?
I have a golf shirt, and I have a hoodie. I love that brown
ESPN. I think I got a couple of those left, so we might give a couple of those away, too.
What, hoodies?
I might. I think so. I don't know
Mark,
where...
That hoodie is as nice as it gets. That's
really?
What
I'm not a hoodie wearer.
I love that. It's a soft...
hoodies aren't good to fat guys.
Oh, I don't know. I like it. You know, this time of the year.
Did I say that?
But it's like real comfortable and it's nice. I like it. So I like it.
All right. So anyhow, all you got to do, email us. First one to do so per the email as they come into the box there at ParkerandTheMan@Yahoo.com with a Rob Parkerism. It could be anything he's ever said over the course of time, any of his little isms. It's not that complicated. You just heard one of them. You can repeat it if you want. Maybe with something else, you will get an ESPN Detroit T-shirt. That's how it works out. And follow us on Twitter. The Twitter account is up, @ParkerandTheMan. We're starting to gain some steam. I want to gain some more Twitter followers, so do that. Just follow us and forget about it and read the crap. And that's a little deal. And I think I don't know if I did it with you yet, but you got to like retweet me so that
yeah,
we can have
yeah,
our...
you haven't given it to me yet, so I'll retweet it.
My boy Notch up there in Minnesota said, hey, you're not even following me, and you're sending me things. I said, I'm not. And I looked back and went, oh, forgot to follow the guy.
Did I do that?
Did I do that? So that's any other business? What do you got, promotables?
You know
get
what?
Started here.
A little bit. You can read my column on clickondetroit.com that I think the Brad Ausmus hiring makes no sense. It's like totally out of left field.
That's a good way to start. Look, See, here, this, if you want Rob's opinion on this thing that we're about to talk about, just see Parker Robert Jr. at clickondetroit.com.
Did you read it?
I did. I did read it.
It's hard to argue with it. I think it, you might like him and like to hire, but I don't think the points are laid out.
I'm not, look, Tram, I'm going to get away from the idea. Do I like Brad Ausmus? He was here twice.
It's not about liking
people. I understand. That's what I'm saying. I'm taking the weather out. And I don't have an affinity for him. I didn't know him that well. He came here in 96. I did do a wacky TV piece.
You wacky.
And you know what's funny? I posted on Facebook that I did this wacky piece with Ausmus. When he first got here, he was traded to the Tigers in June of 96. It was a month and a half before Cecil was traded to the Yankees. And I did a piece on how good looking he was. And I went around the room, went to Higgy, Tony Clark. Cecil was in there too. It was like literally probably 2 weeks before Fielder was traded.
I'm sure they love to talk about how handsome another man was.
And remember, this is at Tiger Stadium where you can't get away with a whole lot of wacky television stuff in the Tiger locker room. It was so small.
It was so small. We were cramped in there.
But the funny part was I posted on Facebook I'd done it. And I got Frankie Malicote and some other guys were like, you know, chiming in. Ed Lehine, they're all saying, hey. And Dave Legacy, who I worked with at Fox 2, photographer, I remember that piece. That's what he wrote to me. I said, Legs, I think you shot it. If you may not remember this, but I think you were the photographer, the videographer on the piece. He didn't remember whether or not he was, but he remembered the piece. So that was my 96 recollection of him. 99-2000, the best thing about Ausmus was he was the catcher in the last game at Tiger Stadium. He was the catcher in the first game at Comerica Park. And really, he was kind of nondescript. I mean, he was the starting catcher those years, but those were nondescript Tiger years. So
I couldn't tell you what his batting average, 230, two, I don't
Dave remember. Dombrowski remembered.
What was it?
251 lifetime.
Okay, I was going
to
say,
Dave, he didn't say 250. He knew it was 251, exactly. That's what it was. I even looked it up. So Dombrowski remembered in his 18 years, he had 251. You know what's funny? The guy that you wanted, Ozzie Guillen, he and Ausmus have very similar major league numbers. They both played almost the same number of years. Guillen was not a great hitter. He had a little better. Obviously, Ausmus had more homers. I think like 80 to Guillen's 26 or something, because Guillen did not hit homers. But then again, Ausmus did steal over 100 bases, so it wasn't like Ausmus had no speed. So it was just funny, if you look up the two numbers from the playing careers of Ozzie Guillen, the guy you wanted, who was never interviewed, was never thought of, as opposed to Ausmus, who got the job, you know, their playing careers were pretty similar in terms of numbers.
I'll tell you this, and I just think it's a terrible hire.
Really terrible? Seriously?
Out of left field, terrible. This is not a job learned on a job situation. I don't believe that this is the guy, Mark. Forget, the only thing Brad Ausmus is here to do is to win a World Series. So either you win it, and I'm totally wrong, or you don't.
Anything, well, I agree with no gray area.
Anything in between doesn't. I don't making the playoffs and all. They've been that. They've done that. Going to the ALCS, all that other stuff. The Tigers at this point in their situation, their franchise, Mark, it's about winning a world championship. And if he does not do that in the next 3 years or whatever it is, it's a failure.
The same Trammell contract. It's 3 years with a club option for the fourth, just like Tram's contract.
It's a failure. That's what I don't believe that Dave can make this hire without putting his reputation on the line, without putting everything that's been built up over the last 4 or 5 years. Everything is on the line. Nobody, you don't know, I don't know. And because you don't know, that's why it's a bad hire. You shouldn't be hiring what you don't know, and nobody knows about Brad Ausmus. I don't care he went to Dartmouth. I don't care how smart he is. I don't care how good looking he is. I don't care. He's a great face.
He's pretty damn good looking.
For the great face for the organization, Mark. None of that matters to me. There were more qualified guys ready to take this team to the next level with instant credibility, not building up credibility, not hoping that the players get along with you, not hoping, wishing, dreaming, but there were guys that you could have put in that place. If the cupboard's bare and there's nobody there, Mark, I got you. Everybody goes, oh, this is Mike Matheny. No, it's not. Mike Matheny's Cardinals had already won a championship before he got hired. 2011, they win the World Series with Tony La Russa. Matheny replaces Tony La Russa. Mark, the pressure's off. I don't care what you say. They won. This team hasn't won yet. They're still trying to get there. If you told me that the Tigers had won the World Series this year, Leland stepped aside, and you wanted to break in a new guy, and you won. You got one out of there. You cannot afford for this window to open and close without a championship. That's just me.
I think the only problem with that is that your list of guys with rings is kind of the land of misfit toys. Ozzie Guillen, who has the ring that you touted, first of all, has always been a loaded weapon away from Attica to me. I mean, he's just a nut job waiting to happen. I don't believe in that. And his final 6 years as a manager, remember, he won that in 05. What have you done for me lately? He was over 500 twice.
Yeah, but the only difference, Mark, is Wichko has no record to go by. You have no idea what he's getting. At least this guy has won. You can say whatever you want. Ozzie has managed, has respect. There's 15 Hispanic
players. But that leaves no wiggle room even for a good team. I'm going to bring up for a good team to ever hire a guy without experience.
I wouldn't do it. And Mark, you're not talking about a guy who's been in a minor league system. Nothing. Never wore a uniform in the big leagues or the minor leagues.
As a coach manager, you mean?
Right. And I'm talking about, as a coach or a manager. I'm frightened of a guy who's never done, never.
Now,
just that I was frightened, me and you both. What did we say about Matt Millen when he got the job? He's never spent a minute in the front office. Never, Mark, a minute. He never did anything.
No, I know. And part of that was the fact that he wasn't taking over 2-14. He was taking over 9-7.
Right. And what did we say? No, that's not the guy who learns on the job. And it went south.
Although that's bigger to me because there's still a guy named Dabrowski who's running the show, getting you the talent.
Yeah, but Dave's not in the locker room in the clubhouse with the guys. And the other part is we've seen this movie before. Okay, and maybe the roster were different, and I don't care. Did Alan Trammell have enough talent to win 100 games? No, that wasn't the issue.
No.
Was he a good
sir.
Mark, was he a good manager?
No, but what was his biggest problem? He had two problems.
Well, he had one inside the clubhouse. Which
okay, well, wait
good.
A second. His biggest problem to me was lack of talent. Pudge was signed in 04. He had 2 years of Rodriguez.
They didn't respect to me, though,
okay,
Mark.
Number two, though, is as opposed to Brad Ausmus, who's already said, I'm keeping Gene Lamont on my bench with me, he hired the wrong guy. Tram hired Gibby, his buddy. The two buddies wanted to go at it in Detroit because they had made a name for themselves as players.
Gene Lamont was so good, he beat a manager. I'm sorry.
Well, pushing 70.
That all sounds nice. And, oh, Gene Lamont is sitting there. Gene Lamont was sitting next to Jim Leland. I don't remember a championship. Oh, Gene Lamont. Oh, they say Gene Lamont. Oh, my God, we got Gene Lamont.
Gene
Lamont
got experience as a manager.
He's sitting there. Oh, did he help us? Did he help Leland win a championship? Let's get Gene Lamont. Oh, my God, Gene Lamont. Stop it with the Gene.
Wow, you hate Gene Lamont. What is your thing with Gino? I thought you liked Gino.
No, he's fine, but don't give me no Gene Lamont.
Well, I can't handle your Ozzie. I can't handle your Charlie Manuel. And let me ask you a question. One of your favorite managers of all time is Lou Piniella.
Oh, no, he's retired. I'm not on that.
No. I'm going back in time. What was Piniella's first gig?
No, he hired with the Yankees.
Did he have a manager?
No, he was one of the first
guys.
With
the Yankees?
And right. And you
did
know
you
what?
Blast that?
Of course. And you know what? Go look, Mark. How did he do with the Yankees? What did they?
Not well.
Okay. And there you go. Now, he went on to another job, and got better as it went on. But it wasn't immediate, and that's what I'm talking about. When you need a guy to push you over, I'm telling you right now, if the Tigers don't win the World Series in 2014, this group currently assembled will not, N-O-T, win a World Series.
I would not go that far, but you do. And it's
do.
Easier to say they won't than they will, because
Mark,
obviously it's special.
Have I ever been, okay, we could say, I told you about Trammell from day one? Did I not?
I agreed with Alan, though, and even Sparky said it.
Okay. Did I tell you about Tom Izzo 12 years ago?
I still don't believe in your level, though.
Okay.
In that second championship.
But what did I say?
You said he would not win another title.
How long has it been?
National championship.
How long has it been?
12, 13 years. That's a long time, and he's still got the gig. I get it.
But when I said that 12, 13 years ago, Mark, what were people?
Let me ask you a question. Have you ever said it and been wrong? Because I don't remember. Have you been wrong?
Yeah, I've been wrong.
Who? Give me a guy that you said would never win a championship, then won one. No. Maybe you're always right. Maybe you're the championship guru. I don't know. Because it's easy to tell me how many times a guy didn't win a title because they're so special and hard to win. Tell me a time when you got wrong. You said, oh, I was wrong about blah, blah, blah. I said he wouldn't win a championship, but he won one. Anybody? If you've been wrong, you must remember it.
No, I
I'm
don't
put you on the spot.
No, I don't remember.
So then you're the championship guru.
All I'm gonna tell you is, too, when people were mad, go back. You can go back and look.
Mad at who?
When the Pistons got rid of Rick Carlisle, and they got Larry Brown, I said I wrote it, Mark, then and there, the preview of the season. He's the missing ingredient, and I said they would get to the finals with Larry Brown.
But he never had an NBA championship.
No, he had
NCAA.
And he hadn't won at that point, but I thought that guy with that team, and all I'm saying is...
I will give you, though, that he had won an NCAA championship,
right,
though. He'd won something.
But I still liked the hire at that time. I thought it was the right hire. I don't believe this is the right hire.
Okay, all right. Here's the tale of the tape, too, just to throw some stuff in here. His only managing experience was the 2012 qualifying round for Team Israel.
Please, don't count that, please.
Who lost to Spain in the pool finals, so he didn't even get to the World Baseball Classic. He is in the Jewish Sports Hall of Fame, made it in 2004. Drafted by the Yankees in 1987, he went expansion to the Rockies in 92. His career went from 93 to 2010. He was 41 years old when he finished with the Dodgers. He played for the Padres, Tigers, Astros, Dodgers. He was twice here as a Tiger. In 96 with that horrible Buddy Bell 109-loss team. That's why I did Wacky Pieces. You got to find something to cover when a team's on its way to 109 losses. He had 248 with four dings and 22 ribbies. He left and came back in 99 and 2000, starting catcher both of those years. Those were years under LP and first year of Phil Garner. Starting catcher, hit 275 and 266, and he had double-digit steals in those 2 years. The interesting thing about 96, if I can go back, this is interesting. Brad Ausmus came here to be the catcher in 96. The other catchers that year were like Brad Parent and Raul Casanova. Remember those names?
Wow.
Yeah, that was the Tiger catching corps. There were 16 different starting pitchers on a team where the leading victory guy had 7 wins. That's who led the Tigers. It was Omar Olivares, and I think it was Felipe Lira won 6. Those were the 2 leading victory guys on the 96 Tigers for Buddy Bell. John Farrell was one of 16.
Buddy Bell, another guy who got a start here.
Yeah, but Buddy had spent his time as a coach and had been in other organizations.
Never managed.
Never managed.
That's all I'm saying.
But he had spent time. I mean, Ausmus wasn't even a coach.
No, this is my issue.
He was just a special assistant, whatever that means, in San Diego. He says he went and traveled and went to games. Okay, well, I did that too. Doesn't mean I'm prepared to be the manager. Maybe I could be. John Farrell was one of 16 Tiger pitchers who made starts that Ausmus caught in 96, the now, of course, manager of the world champion Boston Red Sox. In fact, his experience was so bad, Farrell's last season was those 2 starts with the Tigers in 96. You know who else was on the 96 team?
Who?
We never talked about this. It was Chad Curtis. Who's now spending 7 to 15 years in prison.
Is that what he got for, what is that, underage?
It was this month, yeah, underage. In the greater Grand Rapids area, he got for touching inappropriately some kids that he was working with in high school. 7 to 15 years he was sentenced to just about a month ago.
Was it little girl? Or
it was girls. It was females, yes. Little girls, 14, 15.
I just didn't
15.
Remember. I didn't know the details.
No, it was a horrible story. But Curtis was on that team, too. He was one of the better players in that 96 team. He played on 5 different playoff teams, 97, 98, 01, 04, and 05, all with the Astros, when the Astros were actually decent. He had 245 in those playoffs that he had. And his only All-Star appearance was 1999 as a Tiger. He also won 3 Gold Gloves. Now, here's a fun fact for you, and this is where I'm scared, okay? Because the question did come up at the presser today, which was kind of thrown together pretty quick on a Sunday, about keeping Lamont, which was strange to me because he has no real affiliation with Lamont, so I wasn't so sure why he was so insistent. Somebody wanted Lamont here, maybe Dave Dombrowski, maybe, or maybe Brad Ausmus just feels like Lamont is the best bench coach in the game because I don't see the other affiliation. They've never played together, played for him.
Weren't they in Houston together, Gene Lamont and him?
If they were, it was for 2 seconds, dude.
They were in Houston.
All right, well, though. Whatever.
They do know each other.
Yeah, well, that's how many years ago?
No, but I'm just saying, but it's not like
he's... Well, he's 18 years in the game. He's shaking hands and known a lot of people. That doesn't mean that I'm going to tout that while I've got Jeff Jones, who he also knows, even called him Jonesy.
Yeah, but he didn't have Jonesy wasn't on a press release for the contract.
No, Jonesy was not. Now, here's my scared part of this. You ready? I'm going to bring this up. Okay? Here's your fun fact about Brad Ausmus. In 1996, he was traded to Houston with others for Doug Brocale. In 2000, he was traded with Doug Brocale back to Houston. So he's been traded for Brocale and with Brocale. Doug Brocale is the supervisor of pitchers.
He was a pitching coach recently.
I know. And he's now the supervisor of pitchers for the Houston Astros, which is like being the head chef for the worst restaurant in the world. I mean, even the worst restaurant, Rob, has a head chef. I'm afraid that your boy Brocale might be a guy coming back to town as a pitching coach.
Could happen. He also was sued by a flight attendant. People don't remember this in 2000. Remember on that flight?
Is that the Higginson thing too?
Yeah, Brad Ausmus was the name.
Was Ausmus part of that with Higginson?
Yes, he was, for calling a flight attendant vulgar or whatever. If you go Google 2000 and Tiger's
suit. I don't remember Ausmus being part of
Ausmus,
that.
I looked it up today.
I'm not doubting you. I forgot about that story.
He's in that too. So that's pretty interesting. And nobody probably brought that up. No, I'm just saying. I wasn't at the press conference, but I'm sure.
Whatever happened to that?
You know.
Because she... How did that result? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
13 years ago. Higgy was involved in that, too.
Higgy was involved, and Jeff Weaver, and a couple guys. It was ugly.
It was bad. She kept it going for a long time. Didn't it get settled away from court?
Right. It's surprising that
somebody paid her.
Didn't get paid instead of all that stuff coming out.
All right, so I'm just saying. I have no knowledge of this, but Brocale, they seem to be buds. They were on four different teams at different times together. So your Lamont thing for his 15 seconds in Houston, he's with Brocale four different times, and he was not ready to commit to Jeff Jones, and he knows Jonesy, so therein lies, it sounds like someone else will be the pitching coach, and who knows what happens with the other coaches. Did you think it was interesting the name Barry Larkin came up, that Dombrowski talked about Larkin?
Barry wasn't going to be used as a pawn, and I think that it was pretty well out there in baseball that it was going to be Brad Ausmus. He wasn't going to be a part of a dog and pony show. And I hate to think this. You know, you were talking about Lloyd McClendon. What did I say? I told you I never believed he had a shot at getting that job. He's much more qualified than Brad Ausmus. I think they used him for a token.
He was my guy. You know that. Lloyd McClendon was my guy.
Do you not believe he was a token interview?
I don't believe it was token.
Oh, I do.
Because he wasn't brought in to do it. He was already here.
No, but
I thought it was interesting when Dombrowski said, well, Brad Ausmus wasn't the way I was thinking when this started, and I wondered, did you say that to kind of shuffle off to Buffalo, the McClendons, the Brookinses, anybody else who might have had an interest with inside the Leland compound?
His name came out very quickly. He talked about a manager with experience, but yet he went out and interviewed a guy without experience. I mean, then he shouldn't.
Well, I think in the press conference where he said, I just said it was preferable. I didn't say it was necessary.
It just doesn't even make sense. So he already.
So why else? Why do you think Ausmus didn't wow him in the interview or something? Why
no,
do you think?
No, I'm just saying. I think that was the guy he wanted. I mean, you know, the GMs talk. People talk. Oh, this guy, Brad Ausmus, he got talked up by somebody. He's really a smart guy. He's Ivy League educated. He's got that look and all that stuff that you like.
But because there's so much involved, why would Dombrowski have the jiggy for Ausmus if he has no affiliation with him?
Because there must be somebody who he respects talked him up, Mark. It happens all the time.
Look, he's done it all the different ways. When he got rid of Garner, Pujols had managed in the organization. He turned out to be terrible, so he didn't last but the year in 2002. That was when Dombrowski, after six games, fired Garner and Randy Smith together. Randy Smith just turned 50, Beth. Your buddy Rit. Yeah, he's 50 years old. I thought he was older than that, but he's only 50. So Smith and Garner get fired. He hires Pujols. And Pujols leaves, and he ends up hiring Tram. So he hires the guy with no experience. Then he goes back to hiring a guy with experience, with a ring, in Leland. And now he's going back to hiring without experience. I don't know. I mean, he's done it every which way but loose in his baseball career between Montreal and Florida.
Not this
here.
Team.
I know.
Not
different
this
deal. Special circumstances with this Tiger team, no doubt.
If they do not, remember, I'm holding you to this. It's only about winning a championship. Nothing else matters. That's what you were supposed to go with this team.
Other notable Dartmouth alum, I wrote this down because have you been to Dartmouth?
No.
I mean, you're an Ivy League guy.
Columbia.
Hanover, New Hampshire is where Dartmouth is. It's Dartmouth College, by the way, not Dartmouth University. Nelson Rockefeller, former governor of New York, vice president for Gerald Ford. Tim Geithner, treasury secretary. Great statesman Daniel Webster. C. Everett Koop, the former Surgeon General who died in February, is a Dartmouth guy.
With that funky goatee.
Well, everybody says he's the only Surgeon General we've ever known the name of. Robert Frost, Pulitzer winner. Laura Ingram, talk show host, went to Dartmouth. Three Nobel Prize winners, including Owen Chamberlain. He's too heady for me. Charles Pillsbury, Mr. Pillsbury Doughboy Man. What do you think about that? All right.
All right.
Your general manager of the New York Mets, Sandy Alderson, is a Dartmouth guy. Donald Hall of Hallmark Cards. Grant Tinker, formerly the NBC executive. Shonda Rhimes, who did who penned Grey's Anatomy, Private Practice, and Scandal. Two of those three I love.
No relation to Buster Rhymes.
No, Shonda Rhimes is not related to Buster Rhymes. But you know, I love Grey's and Private Practice. Scandal's got Kerry Washington. Did you enjoy her on Saturday Night Live? Did you watch her at all with Eminem?
Yeah, I did see a little of it. This is pretty funny.
Pretty funny. Not bad. Not the worst one I've ever seen. Eminem was his usual. Mindy Kaling from The Office and her own show right now on Fox. Mindy Project. NFL's Jeff Kemp and Jay Fiedler. Dr. Seuss. Theodore Geisel went to Dartmouth. And the best one is Chris Miller. You know who Chris Miller is?
Dennis Miller's brother?
No. Closer than someone who said, is that the Atlanta Falcons quarterback? No. He co-wrote Animal House, and Animal House is based on his fraternity at Dartmouth, which was Alpha Delta Phi. So that's where Osmus gets his Animal House ways. Maybe from, maybe he was in the, maybe you should look that up. He was in that fraternity.
See, he was in a fraternity, thought he was in the frat house when he was on the plane.
Fratto house. Inside the Fratto house.
Very nice.
All right, just a couple other baseball things. First of all, the Cubs and Mariners still have openings. Here are the names, and I'm curious now to see who you think will end up with both teams. We've got two left, Cubs and Mariners. Cubs right now seem to be in on Torrey Lovello, Eric Wedge, the same Rick Renteria that the Tigers went out and saw in California. He was part of the interview process. And Davey Martinez's name is still with Chicago.
I like Dave Martinez. He sat there with Joe Maddon. He played for the Cubs. Mark, you know that. And I think he deserves an opportunity. He's put in his time, and I think he deserves a chance.
I like Davey Martinez, too. I think the Eric Wedge project.
I'm kind of through with that. He's had a couple of spots.
Maybe after a while, away from the game, do a little television or something. And Torrey Lovello must not interview very well because he's been interviewing for years. Now, Seattle, Lloyd McClendon has interviewed in Seattle. Here are the other names. Tim Wallach, who interviewed for the Tiger job, is part of that group. Joey Cora had a second interview already. Dave Valley, How Deep Is My Valley, who has no experience, is a former catcher, blah blah blue. Ron Wotus and Chip Hale. Hale is the A's bench coach. Of those names, who do you think will end up with the M's?
Maybe Lloyd. Maybe Lloyd will get an opportunity. He deserves one.
Second time he's interviewed with the Mariners.
That's what I'm saying. He's got two interviews, so maybe he'll be able to pull that one out.
Jim Leland is going to be the Grand Marshal in the Turkey Day Parade. Do you have anything to say to Leland and advice on the Thanksgiving Day Parade?
Gobble, 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 gobble. Gobble, gobble, gobble. You see what I'm doing with my chin?
You're doing the gobble thing. Some moves by the Tigers. Now, free agency begins Tuesday morning, I believe it is, 12:01 in the morning. Is that correct? Brian Peña not returning to the Tigers, which made me think, Osmus is 44. He'll be 45 in April next year. He could be the emergency catcher. He could be the first player manager in baseball since who? He could do it. He's in great shape. He's a workout freak.
That's one thing I knew about him.
No, come on. Later than Frank Robinson. Give me the last player manager.
Pete Rose
is the last in the National League. Correct. Who's the last player manager in the American League? And it is not Frank Robinson.
Mike Hargrove.
No.
Wasn't he at one point?
No, he was never a player manager.
Okay. Who?
Don Kessinger.
Oh, okay.
With the White Sox in 79.
Shortstop?
Yep. He was the last player manager in the American League. So, Brad Ausmus, if you need an extra catcher, V-Mark can't do it. Alex Avila goes down. And ain't got nobody else of that holiday guy right now. Since they, I think that's a bad move. I wish they had stayed with Brian Peña. Something about his weight that they just didn't like. What do you think? Did you hear anything? What did your moles tell you as to why the Tigers were so quick to dump Brian Peña and not bring him back?
I don't know. I'm surprised by it. I don't know about he hit, but maybe they didn't like
him. He hit. Clubhouse guy was good.
Maybe they didn't like him as a catcher. You know, there's a lot of balls that got by him, too. So I don't. There must be the pitchers probably didn't love him catching.
Jose Veras' option not picked up. What did you think about that?
What did he do? Give up a grand slam? I mean, I thought he was marginal. They picked him up. To me, he was marginal at best.
So you would not bring him back?
No.
Because the idea is maybe they can get him back for a lower price. Wouldn't even bother. Matt Tuiasosopo gone to Arizona. I understand that. He hit well early. Didn't hit a lick second half of the season for the most part. So
that's not a shocker either.
Nah, and baseball, you better do it the other way around.
When you put a shortstop out there to play left field.
Well, all-star.
No, but it still tells you what they thought of you, though.
And Tuiasosopo got picked up by the Diamondbacks already. And Darren Downs is gone. He was picked up by the Astros. In fact, picked up by Doug Brocale. who handles pretty much all the pitching decisions in Houston. All right, so free agency. Peralta, Benoit, Infante, Dotel, Bonderman, and Santiago. Of those names, who has to come back? Zero.
Zero.
Nobody.
They don't have
you don't,
to.
You don't want anybody back.
I mean, if you brought Benoit back and you got a real closer and put him at the in the eighth inning, okay, I got that. I'm not that thrilled about him being a closer. So that's the only guy I think. Santiago, he's a nice player, Mark. Can you get another guy to play that role? You probably can.
Don't you think Ramon Santiago, though, since he's been here since 03, has like a lifetime pass to be a Tiger? It just seems that way, doesn't it? He's been here that long.
But I understand they like him. He's a hard worker. He's a good little player. But I'm just saying at this point, Mark, you couldn't get somebody else for cheaper to play and bat 210. You know what I mean?
No Peralta, huh?
No.
If Iglesias is your shortstop, I suppose probably not.
Where is he going to play? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. Peralta was making $6 million. He batted over 300 this year, right? Is he coming back? Especially he hit well in the playoffs. So is he coming back for less money, or is there somebody who could say this guy could still hit?
Well, of the closers out there, Grant, Balfour is going to – I love the name Balfour as a closer. Isn't that terrible?
That's pretty amazing.
Isn't that terrible all these years? Fernando Rodney's available again, and Joe Nathan. Is it time for the Nathan project here? He was such a hater. You know, Torrey Hunter worked out well from the Twins, longtime Twin like Nathan was. Would you spend the money on a guy like that? Do you really think they should go out and put their money into a closer this time and not dick around with the idea of a Valverde or a Benoit? Although Benoit was very good for most of the year. I mean, he was very good. He had that streak going where he did not blow a save out of, what, 22?
Yeah, but at the end, he blew a couple before the season ended. And he gave up the big grand slam, Mark. I know. You can
some
talk
guy,
about everything else that doesn't matter. That's what they have you
I've told for. Guys, I've said this before. I said, sometimes guys are the victim of getting too far. Sometimes they get to these situations. You always say, all the Chicago Cubs and all these other teams that never make it, their guys just go away and you never see them in great, big situations. And here you got a guy like Benoit. He's done his job. He's worked his ass off. He's done so well. He got the gig after Valverde. They couldn't handle him. Pappalardo had to go away. And then yet he makes one humongous mistake in a postseason game. And that can cost you. That the whole way you look at guys is different. I always tell people, be careful what you wish for. You want to play in those big stages, World Series, playoffs. But if you screw it up, you know, as opposed to a Tim Tebow, I know, who threw a 10-yard pass, it turns into an 80-yard touchdown, and everybody thinks he should get jobs for the rest of his life. That's almost the opposite effect of those big plays in postseason play.
It is, because, Mark, you're right. Benoit did a really nice job for most of the season. But when you think back about Benoit, what do you think about? He gave up the grand slam that changed the whole series, Mark. Instead, the Red Sox went on to win a World Series. If you're up 2-0 going back to Detroit, how does that change? It's huge. You didn't just lose a game. You were up 5-1.
Is your basis of Benoit and Veras the two Grand Slams?
Yep. That's what I look at. They both gave up huge. Veras was just okay. I mean, he wasn't lights out. And Benoit, I don't look at him as a closer, Mark. I just don't. I look at him
so
as
you're willing to go maybe even Rondon now. Give Rondon that shot.
Give him the shot. Again, here you go. You better get that bullpen buttoned up.
It's the same off-season issue that you had last year.
And that's the reason, even though I picked them to make it to the World Series, the reason I didn't pick them to win, Mark, was what? The bullpen. And I kept saying, I don't see it. You don't have a closer. The bullpen's not fully addressed. And at first, Dave Dombrowski, remember, Mark, just like the Brad Ausmus, what was his plan at the end of last year? What was his plan?
In terms of a closer?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
He was going to give an unproven
Rondon at the time?
Rondon the job without competing for it in spring training. It was handed over to him. How did that work out for you?
Not great.
That's why you don't do stuff like that. I didn't like a closer coming in who had never pitched in the big leagues, Mark, at all. And I don't like a manager who's never coached or managed in the big leagues either, or minor leagues for that matter.
You got some nice comments, by the way, at the end. Did you read them? If you ever read them, those are fantastic.
But that's what, you know what?
You know, no, I'll tell you what.
It just means I moved the needle, Mark.
Absolutely.
That's all it means.
Because I've seen columns on bigger forums that don't get half the responses that you get.
Don't you think?
Oh, as I saw the list, the litany, the veritable plethora. the cavalcade.
And then you just love it, like, oh, I don't read anything or watch anything you do. So you comment on a how would you comment on a column, though?
Well, they always do that. I don't ever read Rob Parker and ever watch him on TV on Channel 4 on Sunday nights.
Sunday nights at 11:30 or after the football games during football season.
All right, coming up, Pistons, Wings. I sound like Bernie. Pistons, Wings. I'm kidding you, Bernie.
Is that the
tease? That's the tease. Pistons, Wings, and a little thing we call Weekend at Bernie's. No. And we'll recap the Spartans' incredible, amazing performance at home in a rainy track.
We both picked MSU.
Yes, you did. And did I not tell you they get to 30?
Yeah, I was.
And if it wasn't a point, a blocked extra point, they would have gotten right to 30. So we'll get to the Spartans in Michigan. And a couple other news and notes. Oh, and we'll do some business looking forward to the Lions and the Chicago Bears. But first, this commercial ad placement.
If you need a great haircut and you're in Detroit, make sure you go to Sporty Cuts on 7 Mile Road, Mark, between Outer Drive and Myers. Sporty Cuts, the best place to get a great-looking haircut. Don't forget, we're the home of the $10 all-even haircut. Or if you're a kid, it's only $8. So go to Sporty Cuts, the sports barbershop, right there in Detroit on 7 Mile Road between Outer Drive and Myers. Hey, Mark.
What, Rob?
Go get Sporty Cut.
Hit us up on the Twitter, as we mentioned. And don't forget to email us at parkerandtheman@yahoo.com. First one to do it and mention a Rob Parkerism wins a Parker and the Man. No, we don't have that yet. A ESPN Detroit T-shirt, but you got to put a Parkerism in there, and don't forget to put your address, because we'll be mailing it. It's not like I'm going to have you come over to the house. And we're doing this podcast, by the way, at Rob's house again today. We're in the man cave. I'll just call it the Parker man cave.
Be careful falling light fixtures. You'll be all right.
Did that actually fall like
yes.
that?
Yes. My dishwasher. I told you I had a little issue.
And that broke like that?
Yep. You see where it is?
Yeah. When are they fixing that?
Coming up. I'm just going to take that light.
You got a guy?
I got a guy.
You got a guy?
He's going to come by. Get everything nice for the holidays.
But it is the holiday season.
It's the holiday season.
So whoop-dee-doo and yakety-yak. And don't forget to get off Brett Ausmus's back. Hey!
That's me. Right? I got a personal vendetta against him.
I love the question. It was David Solano from Channel 7 who asked the most riveting question at the press conference, which was, so why number 7? See, because he's Channel 7, I think. So he asked, why 7? And it was an amazing answer, because it was a number he actually wore here. And if he had looked that up on Baseball Reference, he would have known that. But that's beside the point. He's a good guy. He's a good kid. He's a good kid. But he did wear number 7. He wore 7 and 12. Andy Dierks has 12. 7 was available. Riveting. By the way, I will say this about Brad Ausmus. Just one other thing. Press conferences will be a lot better. He won't be eating during them. He won't have his stocking feet sitting up on the desk. He won't have a pack of smokes.
I like Jim Leland. I don't care what you say.
I like Jim Leland, too. He's okay. He's just not and I didn't expect the yuck master. I'm fine with that. He wasn't the most friendly guy all the time. But Brad Ausmus will just change the... It's a new era, dawn of a new day, when it comes to post-game press conferences, minus the damn eating.
When they're 7-23 to start the season, you'll see how good those press conferences are.
Okay. Dude, I'm the one who touted the Leland clubhouse. I said, you got to remember, it could be chaos if it's not done well. And if that happens, you can't win. I don't talk about the 86 Mets or the old Bronx Zoo. They're very few and far between those kind of clubhouses that can win with chaos. So I agree there. And we'll see what kind of clubhouse he... I just hate that line. You know I hate that. We'll see what happens. I want to know what's going
to
happen.
I get that all the time. Well, we'll just have to wait. No, dude. You know what? I'm an analyst. I'm a columnist. That's what I do. I'm supposed to take a look at a situation and decide, do I
not
like
wait
it?
And see.
Not wait and see. Why would we have sports talk radio or do anything? Just wait till it's all. Oh, don't say anything. Don't comment at all about the NBA season, Mark, until it's all over.
Like everything.
Exactly. Come on.
Well, because we're in a Facebook-like world now.
It's
like my post on Facebook, like my place, like Parker and the Man page on Facebook, like. And by the way, go like Parker and the Man on Facebook. Pistons start the season 2-1. You were at the game on Sunday against the Boston Celtics. Terrible team. Brad Stevens, enjoy the money, man, because that's a long road to hoe.
And you know, Rondo just tore his ACL or something, his knee or I mean, when is he going to be out there? They don't know yet how long he's going to be out.
You know the best player in that team is? It's Kelly Olynyk, the guy they got from Gonzaga.
I was a little surprised. Got too much hair going on.
Well, he was good in the summer league, too, but he has translated already. He's the best player they got, and that's not saying much. So Stevens took the money grab, and I don't blame him, but the Celts are 0-3. I knew that wouldn't be any good. Why, though, tell me why KCP did not play at all, not a minute, after performing pretty well against Memphis.
I don't know. That was just one of those things. Funny, Chauncey was saying that. He even said the kid didn't even play tonight. And I don't know. I don't think it was anything. It just kind of went. Remember, Jennings came back, so somebody who was playing
had to lose some minutes.
So it wound up being him. And if you saw Mark, Chauncey only played 20 minutes, I think it was. They're not burning him out. I mean, Chauncey's days of playing 35 or 37. He's 37 years old. It's not going to happen. So they got enough guards that he won't play that much. And he didn't come back in. Like, some fans were looking for him to come back in the fourth quarter. It didn't happen. You know, he played his minutes and he was done. And I like Jennings. I like what I saw. I mean, he came back. He already, Mark, took the mask off. He had the protective mask for his jaw. In the fourth quarter, he just took it off. He said, I wasn't playing well, and I didn't care.
From listening to him after the game, he sounds already more mature than he was in Milwaukee. He had some issues with that with the Bucks, but I think he's starting to find that, and I think with the Pistons, and I think this is the Dumars factor. I really do believe this. I think part of playing with the Pistons is the respect for Joe D and not acting like a goofball or an idiot or doing stupid stuff and being told that when you get here. And it's not Maurice Cheeks doing that, Mo Cheeks doing that. That's guys around the league. Hey, look, if you go play for the Pistons, good, great organization. You'll get paid like you paid anywhere, though. But you got to respect the guy in the front office. You got to respect Dumars.
Because he's not a guy who hadn't done anything. I mean, when you talk about Mark, we talk about it all
the
time.
Well, half the GMs in the NBA no one's ever heard of.
Right. And the other thing is, there are only four GMs who have won a championship as a player and as a GM. And Joe D's the only African-American to do that. But you have Mitch Kupchak. You have Danny Ainge. Jerry West and Joe Dumars. And I'm sorry, you got four guys. That's a pretty impressive list to be on, Mark, because it doesn't happen. And people know
he's a small club.
He wasn't just a player. He was a big-time player. And I think that he's a Hall of Famer now. He's got all those other things going for him. And I think that you're right. There is a respect factor.
Well, what I saw...
I like the team. I like this team.
Well, they're fun to watch to begin with, first time in years.
Am I right? It is fun to watch.
Fun to watch. Be fun to watch on a nightly basis. And you can't say that for the last 5 years through Michael Curry, the 2 years of Cue Ball, and then 2 years of Al Frank. Mo Cheeks, I love Mo. I have to use the L word. I got a lot of love and respect for Maurice Cheeks. I really liked the hire. I like it more now that I've watched him do his business, even for the first three games.
And he's not all emotional. He's very businesslike. You don't see him go crazy.
One thing I'll give him in that, which I told you was a bad loss to Memphis on the road, and I'll give you a reason why in a second. For a couple of reasons. But what I loved about Maurice Cheeks in there, he didn't flail his arms. He wasn't yelling at guys. He was calm, cool, collected. I thought he handled the business well. The results weren't good, but the business of basketball was handled well. The reason I thought it was a bad loss, though, to Memphis is, first of all, they got a streak going of losses against the West on the road that I don't even know what it's at anymore. It's like they didn't win one game on the road against the West last year, and I think that was 15 straight. I think combined with the previous season, we're like 17 or 18 straight.
And they had a chance to break that. The only thing that...
And Memphis had never won, had never been 1-0 in their history, but had never won their home opener. Is that what it was?
Something like that. The only thing you got to look at, and they talked about it tonight, Sunday night after the game, is the turnovers. They had 21 turnovers. They were just sloppy at the start of the second half. 21 turnovers, which led to 27 Boston points. That has to be cut down. You just can't give up the ball that much. Boston made 24 turnovers, which is a ton. But they're not that good, and they shouldn't be. The Pistons have a good chance to be sixth seed. I like it. We talked about their win total, Mark. So far, they're off to a nice start. They got two big games coming up at home, Tuesday night against Indiana, and then OKC, who got Westbrook back tonight, Sunday night. They play at the Palace on Friday, so Tuesday and Friday at the Palace.
Well, I want to say one more thing about the overtime against the Grizzlies. Tayshaun Prince, first of all, Tay-Tay hit a big two, then a big three ball, okay? At that point, I started to see, even with Chauncey in the lineup, and of course, Mr. Big Shooter there missed a big shot at the end of the regulation, could have won the game outright and been done with it, not gone to overtime there in Tennessee with all those fabulous babes. Crowd at Memphis games, amazing with the babes. Anyhow, I saw a little intimidation that I, even in the bad years with Al Frank and Kuster and Michael Curry and the last year of Flip, I didn't see that before. And I'd never seen that from the Pistons, and it's not like them. And I want to remind them, you can't let that happen, especially on the road. I don't care if it's the West or the East. But that really startled me. That was when I said, when we do the podcast next, I want to mention that. Because that looked weird to me, that they were literally taken out of their game by a couple of shots and then intimidation. Zach Randolph did it. Conley did it. Who else did I see do it for Memphis? But they were like getting in their face. And the Pistons seemed to kind of run the other way. They got I want that intimidation out of Monroe, Drummond. Drummond's so young, 20 years old. Looks like he's 40. Greg Monroe knows better. He's been in the league too long. But what I liked about the win over Boston, Rob, was that's the formula for victory. The 15 out of Monroe, the 15 and 12 out of Drummond, Josh Smith doing his thing. He doesn't have to have the ball shoot 30 times.
He doesn't have to, and you know what? He played well when they needed him to play well.
I got like a bunch of texts. Josh Smith is really good.
Oh, he's a good player. I don't know why people don't hear.
Because he spent his time in Atlanta, and they didn't win anything.
But he's a good
player. He was good there too, but they didn't win anything.
Right, but he's a good player. He really is.
As you mentioned about the games with Indiana Pacers coming and then the Thunder, after they go four straight out west, here we go again with the West, four in a row, including the Lakers, and then six of the next day will be on the road after these two home games. So this is going to be a big stretch for me because they got to break this Western losing streak.
They got to play about 500 on that. If they could do that out west, they'll be good to go.
What did you think of Miami's two early losses to the Sixers and that great start from Michael Carter-Williams, who's like set records? So he's done things that no rookie had done in first couple of games in like either an NBA history or for many, many years with steals and points and whatnot. And the Sixers are 3-0 under Brett Brown. But I thought Miami, look, they're going to stumble early. I think they did a little bit of that last year. Same exact plan. They didn't play that well. Then they had that loss to Indiana that happened like on November something and then didn't lose a game for the next 3 months. And I think that can be the similar pattern again for Spoelstra, LeBron, Bosh, and Way of Wade. And then they came right back and beat the Wizards on Sunday, 103-93, with LeBron scoring 25 points. I said this about Brooklyn. I still think that that's an old team, and I know you love Brook Lopez, but I got to prove it to me that there's something really happening with the Nets. Jason Kidd just got there as coach because he didn't get the first couple of games, and so he had his debut and lost it. So to Orlando, of all teams. But Philadelphia, that could be a surprise team in the East. And I really like, you know, Brett Brown is one of those guys, paid his dues, sat on the bench out there, was in San Antonio. And even though Miami Heat had the couple early losses, I think that, you know, here we are complaining about the two-time champion Heat. Here we are complaining about LeBron, complaining about D-Wade. Rob went upstairs for a second. College basketball, MSU and Michigan open this week. Their exhibitions Monday for both teams. MSU plays Indiana of Pennsylvania. I'm going to be up in East Lansing for that at Breslin. And Michigan plays Wayne State at Chrysler. And then the starting games for both, the openers for both, are on Friday. Spartans, number 2 in the country, behind Kentucky, will host Joe Dumars. No, they don't host Dumars, but his former McNeese State team will be in East Lansing on Friday. So McNeese State will be the first victim for Tom Izzo and what is really going to be a powerful group of Spartans. I got to see Gavin Schilling and Alvin Ellis in their first exhibition against Grand Valley last week, and they look like something. There's something going on there to go along with Adrian Payne and Keith Appling and Gary Harris, who is the preseason conference player of the year pick, along with Travis Trice. There's a ton of talent. And that's why MSU is number 2 in the country. And they better do something this year. I'll give you that. If Izzo's going to do anything in the next few years, this would be the time to get started. Michigan, number 7 in the country, will have UMass Lowell. Hockey team played them, too, at Chrysler. And I got to see their starting, their first three frosh between Zach Irvin, Derek Walton, the Detroit kid, and Dan Dockich's son, Andrew Dockich. All 5 of those freshmen look very good in their first, exhibition games. But Here's why I'm having a problem right now with the future of both Michigan and Michigan State basketball. The two biggest recruits that they've had for a bit of time since the Jared Parker thing went awry and he lost him to Duke. Devin Booker was up for Michigan State. It was down to three. And James Blackman Jr. was in beeline, had a beeline for him. They both did not pick the Michigan schools. Devin Booker picked Kentucky on Thursday. And James Blackman Jr., who already dissed Indiana, I'll give him this. He at least didn't pick Kentucky, so it was a big day for John Calipari, for both players. He already dissed Indiana once. His dad played at Kentucky, Blackman's father. If you remember, that name sounds familiar. His dad played at Kentucky, and he picked IU over the Wildcats. But the bottom line is, Booker didn't pick MSU, and Blackman didn't pick Michigan. And I still think this is going to be an issue. As good as Glenn Robinson is now, and as good as Gary Harris is now, and they're doing for now, this is where you come in. This is where I get nervous because both guys are losing big-time recruits. It's not about this year for those guys. It's for the future. And once the Applings and the Robinsons and the McGarrys are gone, which won't be in it'll be in short order with the NBA call next year, I really wonder if those two, you know, are really set up for the future. Both of them.
Not next year. Not the year after. Not the year after that. It's the same old story. And you know what? Michigan State, number two ranked?
Number two right now in the country.
Okay, we'll see about that and Izzo and all the other stuff. I don't know what to make of it. If I'm a recruiter and I'm recruiting kids, all I say is go look at his record of putting guys in the NBA. He doesn't do it. If you want to get in the NBA, that's not the guy. It's not the guy to go play for, Tom.
Still can't believe Zach Randolph, though, is still playing at a high level. He's been there for a long time.
I know. And you know what? I don't know. You clarify this for me, because I've heard all kinds of stuff. He didn't go to the NBA with Tom's blessing. I remember Tom ripping the kid that he wasn't ready.
Yes, and he never did it again after because he got ripped for ripping Zach Randolph.
Am I right?
Oh, yeah.
He ripped the kid.
Who said that he...
Somebody told, there was a story about Zach Randolph and how Izzo... I said, no.
Forget how long ago that was.
It was a long time.
It was 13 years ago.
But it wasn't. He was not happy about it. He said the kid wasn't ready and all this other stuff.
Well, that kid's made Randolph's father promised him he'd stay at least two.
That kid made... You know how much money he's made in the NBA?
Probably $150
million. Yeah, probably $150. He signed two big contracts.
Red Wings, three straight wins of the road trip now. They're back all of a sudden. They got the shutout over Edmonton, 5-0. Peter Mrazek, his first career goose egg.
Didn't they lose four in a row at one point?
Yes, yeah, they started to lose, and then boom, now they can win out west on the road.
They're used to the west, even though they're an east team now.
But they've beaten Vancouver, Edmonton, Calgary. They've got Winnipeg Monday night, and then 7 of 8 will be at Joe Louis Arena starting Thursday with the Dallas Stars. Darren Helm finally came back, scored in his first game. It's only his third game since March of 2012. It is funny, though, Rob, to see that the Detroit Red Wings at 9-4-2 are tied for first in the Atlantic Division with Toronto and Tampa, because you are so used to the Western team.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing this year, but it'll all work out for them.
So I think right now Mike Babcock should be pretty damn happy. He should call up Mo Cheeks. Mo, this is how we win on the road in the West, because you got to do the same thing we did, and you got to play your ass off. One thing I've always noticed about the Wings, whenever it's at Rexall, for Edmonton or Vancouver, they play harder there. I don't know why. It just seems like they do. And I don't know if it's just because they're in the, you know, they go out, they just have a thing for it. There's some mindset. There's something that gets in their brains about getting Western wins. But they've always played very well in those venues, for the most part, in the regular season. Postseason, different deal, but that's a different season anyhow. And I wish the Pistons would come up with that kind of fire to win those games on the road like that. It did not look good against Memphis. But back to the Wings. Right now, there's no issue. A 5-0 shutout over Edmonton. Their aggregate score has been pretty damn good. But it's good to see Peter Mrazek do something. Next podcast, I'll get to this Big Ten hockey thing, which a guy called me about because he heard me mention it, reference it. It starts later this month. So when they get started, I'm really not a fan, and I'm really not happy with what they're doing. Speaking of college, though, let's get to the 29-6. Spartan blasting of Michigan, which earned them a good jump in the polls to number 18 in AP and 17 in the BCS. They went five spots for beating Michigan. 8-1 Spartans, 5-0. Biggest Spartan rout of Michigan since 1967, when it was Duffy Doherty versus Bump Elliott, the two coaches then. All I can tell you, Rob, is I'm not a big with the numbers. 7 sacks of Devin Gardner and a minus 48-yard rushing total for a 60-minute football game.
They were going backwards the whole way. And I'm telling you, the offensive game plan and play calling was atrocious by Michigan. I just couldn't understand it. Things weren't working. Michigan State was applying so much pressure to Gardner. I just didn't get it. I didn't understand where they were going, what they were trying to do. All I know is it wasn't working, and it looked bad. And I give Devin Gardner credit for staying in there, Mark, and taking the beating that he took. And it was even one play. Do you remember this play? It's 3rd and 9. He's rushing on the left side, and he pulls up short for the first down, Mark. He didn't get it. He gets 8 yards, but he could have if he gone. But he had been hit so often. Do you know what I mean? He didn't go forward.
He got racked, too.
Do you know what I mean? He kind of pulled up, and I said, that's weird. Like, you can see where the stick is. How could you go short of that when you're running for a first down? But he was shell-shocked, I think, from being hit so much.
I've never seen like that. Look, I've watched these games with Sparty since the 70s. Because I can't go back to 1967 and remember it. But the 70s, I've never seen a Spartan domination like this on all ends of the football. I've never seen anything like this. This is the beatdown Michigan was used to putting on State year after year after year. The last time MSU allowed minus 48 yards on the ground was 30 years ago to Northwestern. It was in Perlis's first year as coach. And they, you know, a terrible Northwestern team got same number, minus 48. Just a bunch of sacks. The ground game was terrible. Fitz Toussaint, you know, was resembling, I think it was Ricky Edwards back for Northwestern back then. I don't want to frank you there, Ricky, but I thought it was you. And then that Darquise Denard pick in the fourth just kind of iced the fact that Michigan, I don't know. You know what somebody told me, which I thought was really interesting, about Brady Hoke? They said, when did Brady Hoke have his most success? His first year? Uh-huh. Whose players did he have that first year? Rich Rodriguez's?
Right.
Maybe Rodriguez was such a good recruiter, but not a good whatever happened to him on the field at the time, that he set Brady Hoke up for some success early, but now that they're Hoke's guys that he has to go recruit, he doesn't have quite the talent.
But we saw that at Notre Dame with former Michigan State. Who was the coach who went to Notre Dame? Come on, Mark.
Former Michigan, Ty Willingham?
Ty Willingham. Do you remember when, my memory is just...
When he used Bob Davies' guys early?
Not Bob Davies. No. It was his guys.
Oh, when Charlie Weiss?
When Charlie Weiss had those years and got that big contract.
Early, right.
Early, and then what happened to Charlie Weiss? Things dried up and got bad once his guys got in place. Don't you remember? Those were Willingham's guys.
It happens a lot, and people always forget that.
Yeah.
That when a new coach comes in, you're playing with that guy's dudes. Well, it's possible. Remember, Rodriguez won 7 games. It wasn't great. It was last year. So maybe it was a difference of 3 or 4 wins, and it was some coaching involved. But those guys just
go from 7 to 10.
And those guys just got that much better the next year, too. But those were the guys that Rodriguez, that Rich Rod you all hated, recruited. I'm not saying bring back Rich Rod and dump Brady Hoke yet, but I could be getting there. No, Michigan was dropping the rankings with this loss, too.
They should have been. That was horrible.
Connor Cook, though, look, I told you this last year.
And then, Mark, one more thing on Michigan. Let's be honest. Michigan is now what? What's their record?
6-2 overall.
Should be 4-4?
Should be, yeah.
They've played 4-4 football, okay? Their record
they played 500 football.
Right?
With the Akron and UConn game.
Akron choke. And I think they should have lost to UConn.
Well, both did because Pasqualoni was fired.
Right.
Paul Pasqualoni got fired at UConn because of that.
But I'm saying... The Akron, that game was no doubt about it. Should have won that game.
Connor Cook made one mistake in the game. He went 18-33 for 252 in the touchdown to Benny Fowler and a rushing touchdown, too. And Jeremy Langford, you know, you like to see, you know what you like? You like to see guys where it's a pattern, not an aberration. This is 4 straight 100-yard games now for Langford.
No, that's
playing Big Ten football.
No, that's real deal. That's the real deal. So.
And the 40-yard touchdown. Spartans have a bye week. Don't go crazy on them playing Ohio State yet for the Big Ten Championship, even though that's the way it's set up right now. Because that next week's, not next week, but the following week, is at Nebraska. And that's the game changer.
So lucky this past
week. Well, better be lucky than good.
No,
you mean the miracle? Well, here's how this Nebraska thing plays out. All right, so Sparty has 2 weeks before Nebraska. They got the bye week, which is nice. Get a little time to celebrate, a little longer than the 24 hours a 29-6 blasting of me, Shaggin, you homer. And Michigan will now play Nebraska. So that's the game this Saturday, 3:30 on ABC in Ann Arbor, Nebraska, Michigan. Now you go back to the miracle, which is the game against Northwestern, Ron Kellogg III, who is the third quarterback for Nebraska. Jordan Westerkamp caught the ball, the Hail Mary, 49 yards. Amazing play, all those Hail Marys are. After the Northwestern field goal put the Wildcats up. But Armstrong was their quarterback for the game. Taylor Martinez is their normal quarterback. He was out with injury. This is the third quarterback on Bo Pelini's roster, and he gets this done. And Northwestern, who started the year in the top 25, is now 0-5 in the conference, 4-5 overall. Pat Fitzgerald is ripping whatever Harry's got left out of his head. But Nebraska still holds some of the keys to the kingdom. They're 3-1 in the conference. They beat Michigan. They're 4-1. Now, that's a tough win to come. Now, we're going to see what Michigan's made of, because it's a home game against a decent team in that division. But this is one of those weeks, again, where the Spartans may be rooting for Michigan. Because now you get a two-game lead on Nebraska if Michigan gets a win before you play them in 2 weeks. That's pretty good stuff if you think about it.
No, it is. I'm down on Michigan. I just down. This season to me.
Well, their season's finished.
Their
season's finished.
And wait till they play Ohio State. I mean.
Well, that's coming. And speaking of Ohio State, 56-0 over Daryl Hazel's little Purdue thing.
No, they beat the drum. They did. That they were unbelievable in that game.
Braxton Miller, 19-23, 233, four touchdowns, all in the first half. That's his first half numbers. It's OSU's largest Big Ten shutout in 33 years. And how about this number? It's the eighth 50-point game under Urban Legend, under Urban Meyer. There was only six in the entire decade of Jim Tressel. Decade of Tressel, he had six. Meyer's coached a year and a half.
He's got eight.
He's got eight. Total yards of the game. Ohio State 640, Purdue 116. The Bucknuts are now 21-0 under Urban Meyer, and he's won 22 straight personally, because that includes his Outback Bowl win for Florida over Joe Pa, the late Joe Pa, and Penn State in 2010. Who the hell is going to beat Ohio State, Rob? Someone got to take down the Bucknuts for me.
I mean, could they have a bad night, a bad game? Yeah, they could, but I don't see it. Urban Meyer's been amazing going there. I mean, Mark,
even, how do you do any better?
I don't know how you do better. I mean, you already always talk about coaches leaving situations. Can you ever like build up your legacy, or you know what I mean, or your lore, where you stand? I think his lore just went through the roof.
I looked this up too. He is still doing this with a lot of Jim Tressel and Luke Finkel's players. Of course, Lukey is still on the staff. He coached the 1 year in between Tressel and Urban Legend.
But even then, Mark, the difference is when he had those guys, players, they weren't undefeated.
Not like this.
Okay, so I get that.
There's no tripping up here like Hoke has now done. He's kind of tripped up a bit.
Exactly. No, this is – he's taking those guys, weeded out whatever, made the best of them, and put themselves in an unbelievable spot.
Illinois, Purdue, and Northwestern are combined 0-13 in the conference, and the next two for Ohio State before your little Michigan game is Illinois and Indiana. Do you expect Ohio State to even sniff losses against the Fighting Illini? Tim Beckman doesn't have a win either in the last couple years at all in the Big Ten, or Kevin Wilson's little Indiana team. Do you expect any issue that – he don't even answer this. He's just going to lay back. Minnesota, another red flag game, could be a trap game, 7-2 and 3-2 with the whole Jerry Kill situation. All these coaches going down. John Fox, Denver's going to have heart surgery, Denver Broncos. We saw Gary Kubiak go down for the Houston Texans. We don't know what his situation is as we do the podcast.
Right, he collapsed Sunday night, Mark, just collapsed on the field.
And what are you watching? You watch his funny stuff, crazy stuff? That is pretty funny. I don't want to do that right now.
Don't do that.
And Jerry Kill at Minnesota has had these seizures since his Saginaw Valley days. He's battled it through Saginaw Valley, Northern Illinois, and now Minnesota. So I don't know what – there's something in the water that coaches are drinking lately or something like that. So, and again, speaking of Northern Illinois, my push for Jordan Lynch for the Heisman for another week. This was this week's numbers. Number 17 in the country, still unbeaten, Northern Illinois. 63-19 at UMass. 10 of 13, 160, and one touchdown. Doesn't sound that impressive, right?
No.
Rushing yards, 119 and four touchdowns.
Impressive.
From the quarterback. He now has 19 passing touchdowns and 12 rushing touchdowns, and he's 21-2 as a starter at Northern Illinois.
Pretty impressive.
I want him to win the Heisman. All right, let's get to the final thing, a little NFL stuff. Lions at Bears this Sunday. Oh, my. Lions 5-3. Bears are 4-3. They still have the Monday night game against the Packers in Lambeau. For all those that, and you know who called me today, Champy called me today, telling me how they're going to roll over the Bears because Jay Cutler's out and Josh McCown, who was with the Lions in 06, played a couple of games. He's the Bears quarterback, dude. His last significant action was 2007 with Oakland after he left the Lions in 06. He was, remember, Marinelli brought him in. Mike Martz wanted him his first year when John Kitna, who ended up taking every snap, so McCown didn't really play for the Lions in 06 because Kitna literally took every snap that season. But that's, you're talking 7 years ago. 6 years ago since significant action with Oakland.
I don't know. Where was he? Was he still in the league somewhere?
Oh, yeah. He's been with the Bears the last couple of years. And, in fact, in 11, he did play two games when Cutler got hurt. But when I mean significant, I mean more than a couple of games. So he was there in Chicago the last couple of years, just not doing anything when Jay Cutler's kind of ruling the roost. So McCown is thrown into this action. He's a guy that Lovie brought in. Lovie, who's up for the USC job, by the by, Lovie Smith.
Is he?
Yeah.
He wants it?
Yeah, it seems that way. College gig. Maybe Lovie sees the writing on the wall.
That's unbelievable. No? They got fired with 10 wins in the NFL. Nobody has a place for you?
I would think so.
Thing, I'm sorry. All the recruiting, keep taking tabs on those kids, hoping they stay out of trouble. It's just a headache. I'm sorry.
Well, that's why the John Grudens of the world don't normally take those jobs like you keep hearing them rumored for.
Yeah, they're just college jobs are a headache. I'm sorry.
Put up with those kids. Got to go to their freaking living rooms. Deal with those parents.
Let me tell you something. John McCloud. You remember John McCloud?
Yo, you told me this once a long time ago. Here we go with the John McCloud story.
Explain
who John McCloud is.
John McCloud, you know, used to be an NBA coach. And John
for many years.
Right. He was at the Suns. He coached the Knicks and maybe a couple other teams. Great guy. But then he wanted to.
Because that matters?
No.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. But then he goes to coach at Notre Dame, right?
Yes, he did coach with the Irish.
And he just said the recruiting aspect was just. He just said, I'm, you know.
You can swear if you need to.
He was just being honest. He was just saying, I'm in the living room of these kids. Basically begging them to come to school, he said. He meant
he was overqualified.
Do you know what I mean? Like
he's sitting there saying, I'm way overqualified to be sitting in this kid's smelly, stinky-ass living room.
And trying to beg the kid to come to the school. So I'm just saying, I always thought it was just an honest approach of what you have to do to be in that situation.
Well, anyhow, that's the Lovie deal, but he's the former Bears coach. Mark Trestman, I believe, will have learned from the first game against the Lions at Ford Field, and he'll be more prepared even with McCown. But McCown is the X factor here. Now, I got this as a loss on my sheet done back in August, like we always talk about in the podcast. This is an L to the Bears to start after the bye week. The Lions are notoriously bad after bye weeks. They have been for their history since the bye week was invented. You've got back-to-back road games, so they got to look forward to going right back on the road to Pittsburgh the next week.
And even though Pittsburgh lost on Sunday, Mark.
At New England.
Right. Was that at New England? Okay.
Yeah, it was in Patriot Land.
The thing that still was impressive was how well Roethlisberger, he threw for over 400 yards and four touchdowns. So is it a piece of cake going to Pittsburgh? They're playing better. They lost big. They gave up a lot of points, but.
Well, before we get to Pittsburgh,
I know
your Soldier Field history, lest you be doomed to repeat it.
I already know it. It's not good.
Lions have lost five straight at Soldier Field. This includes the year that they were going to the postseason and playing the New Orleans Saints and getting kicked, you know, a butt. They've only got two wins in Chicago since 2000. They're 2-10. Okay? In the last 30 years, the Lions are 7-23
wow.
at Soldier Field. And that includes those years in the 90s when they went to six postseasons. So there were good Lions teams that still went to Soldier Field and lost.
Right, and didn't win often. Right.
They're 4-13 in all games against the Bears since Mooch in 2004.
Is that what it is?
Only beaten four times, including Ford Field. All right? 17 in there since the last time that I counted up after Mariucci. So that's still a bit of time. I pick, look, if Jay Cutler were starting this game on Sunday, I'd probably pick the Bears by 10 points. I probably would. With Matt Forte and with all they got going, Julius Peppers doing his thing and whatnot. Because it's Josh McCown, I'll still go with my pick. As bad as I don't want to now because I don't have any faith in McCown, and I really want to see him against the Packers now, which we can't do while we're doing this, I'm going to go 21-20. They'll win. Bears will win by one. I'll give the Lions that. They can keep it close with Chicago on the road with McCown at quarterback.
And the reason that I still have to stick with the Bears is I have to see the Lions go on the road and beat some of these teams that they can't beat. You know, like, that's what I need to see. They did. They went to Washington and won. But Chicago's a place you just gave me the numbers. They don't do well. Until they start winning on the road a little more consistently, I'll look at wins and say, oh, that's automatic. I don't think anything on the road for the Lions is automatic.
So let me make it clear. On the sheet in August, and we're both saying right now, we're still, even with McCown at quarterback, or anybody else, because Cutler I don't think is coming back anytime soon. I don't believe he'd be back by next Sunday. We're still going to pick the Chicago Bears to beat the Lions on Sunday. So there's your pick. I just want to mention this because I thought this was hilarious. The Packers are coming up for the Thanksgiving Day game, which is now, you know, less than a month away at the end of this month, 28th of November.
Is that not scary or what?
Don't even get me started. Since Halloween is over, I hope you enjoyed our spooky graphic that we had for our...
I did see that. Nice job. Real nice.
The Thanksgiving Day game. Thank you, Ray. The Thanksgiving Day game against the Packers. This is halftime. You ready? Now, we're normally used to a Bon Jovi or a John Mellencamp. They did have the Nickelback year where everybody hated it, but at least it got talked about. You ready for halftime? Did you see it?
No.
Okay. This is your halftime show for the Thanksgiving Day game. National television. Fox TV. Tony Luca from The Voice. I guess he's a Detroit guy. He was on the show The Voice. The one with, you know, Adam Levine and Christina Aguilera and all that.
Okay.
The Walled Lake Central Marching Band. Now, for me, it's cool because I have to drive by it every day. It's right there at Oakley Park and Commerce, and I can see the big truck. It says Walled Lake Central Marching Band on the truck. And then they're going to do a card stunt in the crowd. This is so... The 70s called. They want their gig back. It's called One Detroit, One Pride card stunt. And all fans that show up to the game, all 65,000 or so, will receive Lions Play 60 Eye Black. That's what you'll get. You get Eye Black. As well as this card you'll...
I have natural eye black. I don't think I need that.
Sorry, you're going to get it anyhow. And the Lions are encouraging all fans to get up and move.
Why can't black guys have white?
White black? Eye white?
Eye white, right?
I don't know. We'll have to check that out. That's Thanksgiving. The same Thanksgiving in which Jim Leland will be your grand marshal. To wrap things up, just other news and notes of the NFL Week 9. Chiefs go to 9-0, beating Buffalo 23-13 at Ralph Wilson. Detroit's very own Ralph Wilson Stadium, named after him, the Buffalo owner. But Kansas City 9-0.
Quarterback Alex Smith doesn't turn the ball over. You get a coach in from Philly. You get a
Andy Reid.
Andy Reid, thank you. You get a coach from Philly. Mark, who needs a change of scenery. Andy Reid are going stale in Philly, and you know what? Look at him, 9-0. I mean, it's impressive. It just is impressive.
1 week after the Jets lose by 40 points to Cincinnati. Right, 49-9. They come back and beat the Saints, 26-20. New York so far this year at 5-4. Win one, lose one. Win one, lose one. Win one, lose one. Win one.
But when they lose, they look so bad. And then you say, okay, that was Geno Smith was horrible last week, and then he plays against the Saints and they win.
Actually, he wasn't that good today. It was this Sunday, as we're doing this on a Sunday. Chris Ivory at 139 yards rushing. They found themselves a little running back over there.
That's the other thing that makes Green Bay scary now, Mark. With Lacy, and they run the football now. They're running for over 100 yards. When you do
Rex Ryan finally got with the program.
Right? When you do that, it's amazing.
Redskins beat San Diego in overtime. I was surprised how RG3 actually played in that game.
Did he play well?
He played pretty good. Okay. You know, I thought they would lose in overtime or he'd lose at the end of regulation, and they held in there. Shanahan's kind of turned it around a little bit there with Washington. So, you know, that's something to look at. And Carolina, what happened to Atlanta? Tony Gonzalez comes back. They still got the great
quarterback
and receivers and everything they want. They're 2-6. Cam Newton's starting to show he's worth that money, even though the money is far from what Stafford and Sam Bradford got the years before. Carolina 34-10 over Atlanta. Are you surprised by where
that game was in Carolina, though, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Still. And then we're not going to diss the big one. Nick Foles ties an NFL record that Y.A. Tittle and Joe Capp and Peyton Manning set earlier this year, or at least tied it this year. Not one, not two, not three, not four, not five,
who
not
is
six.
LeBron?
Not one, not two. Seven touchdown passes against the Oakland Raiders. The Raiders just win, baby.
What a big win last week.
Right. But the most amazing thing about it is he threw seven touchdown passes while there was still 4 minutes left in the third. He didn't even get to the fourth quarter. They finally took him out and put Matt Barkley in, speaking of USC. It wasn't Michael Vick. Seven touchdown passes. Eagles win 49-20 in Oakland. Can't win at home, but they're winning some road games. Nick Foles, what do you do, Rob? Serious, because we saw this with Matt Flynn against the Lions. Got him a big contract, and then he's barely played since. What do you do when a guy like, do you think it's happening?
You got to ride it out and see. This guy throws seven touchdowns. I got to let him play the next couple of weeks and see if this is sticking or is this not sticking. Do you know what I mean? Like, is this for real or is this a fluke? And so I'd expect Foles to be the quarterback now.
Boy, I did not see this coming. I thought this guy was horrendous. I thought this would be the last year. The landscape is littered with the Gino Torettas of the world who had pretty good college career. Well, Toretto even won a Heisman. Pretty good college careers. Nick Foles was good at Arizona. Fizzled out quickly in the NFL. Seven touchdown games just don't come by, just don't happen, that often. And on the road, I don't care if it's the Oakland Raiders, the current way the Raiders are. I don't care if he's playing Farmington Hills Harrison.
You never poo-poo that. That's something that's really hard to do. He has to be a quarterback, Mark. He just has to be.
All right, check us on Facebook. Go to Twitter. Follow us at Parker and the Man. What do you got to promote this week?
Don't forget, read my column on theshadowleague.com. It's an interesting column about the Washington Redskins controversy, Mark. I said that this thing could be over like that. The name could be changed.
Oh, the Indian thing?
Could be changed.
Native American thing?
Native American,
the Indian?
Yes. It could be over like that. I got the solution. It'll be over in 2 seconds.
Me heap him like that column.
That's right.
Is Chief Nakahoma going to be that?
Chief Nakahoma.
The former Atlanta Braves mascot, Chief Nakahoma. Get it? Nakahoma.
Don't be an Uncle Tomahawk something. I remember that.
Don't be an Indian giver.
Exactly.
Especially with the podcast.
Unbelievable.
And again, if you want to win the t-shirt, just email us at parkerandtheman@yahoo.com. That's all we got for right now. Go and vote on Tuesday if you're in the city of Detroit or if there's a local election in your area. Of course, this isn't the big year. Next year will be a little bit bigger than we're far away from 16 yet. But Detroit will have a new mayor come, unless there's controversy, come Wednesday, which will be interesting to see. For the moment, though, he's Rob Parker.
And he is the man, Mark Wilson. Thanks for joining us on this podcast. We'll see you next time.
In your time, with our time, for our time and your time. We have to have a better ending.
Yes.
Our ending sucks.
Well, I'll get back to my other ending pretty soon.
Are you sure?
Yeah, pretty soon.
Still, our ending sucks. All right, have a good one. See you later. Bye.